Chapter 12. At 10 o'clock they met in the same room, Paula appearing in a straw hat having a bent-up brim lined with plaited silk, so that it surrounded her forehead like a nimbus, and Somerset armed with sketchbook, measuring rod, and other apparatus of his craft. And Mr. Havill? Said the young man. I have not decided to employ him. If I do, he shall go round with me independently of you, she replied rather brusquely. Somerset was by no means sorry to hear this. His duty to Havill was done. And now, she said, as they walked on together through the passages, I must tell you that I am not a medievalist myself, and perhaps that's a pity. What are you? I am Greek, that's why I don't wish to influence your design. Somerset, as they proceeded, pointed out where roofs had been and should be again, where gables had been pulled down, and where floors had vanished, showing her how to reconstruct their details from marks in the walls, much as a comparative anatomist reconstructs an antediluvian from fragmentary bones and teeth. She appeared to be interested, listened attentively, but said little in reply. They were ultimately in a long narrow passage, indifferently lighted, when Somerset, treading on a loose stone, felt a twinge of weakness in one knee, and knew in a moment that it was the result of the twist given by his yesterday's fall. He paused, leaning against the wall. What is it? Said Paula, with a sudden timidity in her voice. I slipped down yesterday, he said. It will be right in a moment. Can I help you? Said Paula. But she did not come near him. Indeed, she withdrew a little. She looked up the passage, and down the passage, and became conscious that it was long and gloomy, and that nobody was near. A curious coy uneasiness seemed to take possession of her. Whether she thought, for the first time, that as he had made a mistake, that to wander about the castle alone with him was compromising, or whether it was the mere shy instinct of maidenhood, nobody knows. But she said suddenly, I will get something for you, and return in a few minutes. Pray, don't it has quite passed. He said, stepping out again. But Paula had vanished. When she came back, it was in the rear of Charlotte de Stancy. Miss de Stancy had a tumbler in one hand, half full of wine, which she offered him, Paula remaining in the background. He took the glass, and, to satisfy his companions, drank a mouthful or two, though there was really nothing, whatever the matter with him beyond the slight ache above mentioned. Charlotte was going to retire, but Paula said, quite anxiously, you will stay with me, Charlotte, won't you? Surely you are interested in what I am doing? What is it? Said Miss de Stancy. Planning how to mend and enlarge the castle. Tell Mr. Somerset what I want, done in the quadrangle you know quite well, and I will walk on. She walked on. But instead of talking on the subject as directed, Charlotte and Somerset followed chatting on indifferent matters. They came to an inner court and found Paula standing there. She met Miss de Stancy with a smile. Did you explain? She asked. I have not explained yet. Paula seated herself on a stone bench, and Charlotte went on. Miss Power thought of making a Greek court of this. But she will not tell you so herself, because it seems such dreadful anachronism. I said I would not tell any architect myself, interposed Paula correctingly. I did not then know that he would be Mr. Somerset. It is rather startling, said Somerset. A Greek colonnade all round, you said, Paula, continued her less reticent companion. A peristyle you called it, you saw it in a book, don't you remember? And then you were going to have a fountain in the middle, and statues like those in the British Museum. I did say so, remarked Paula, pulling the leaves from a young sycamore tree that had sprung up between the joints of the paving. From the spot where they sat, they could see over the roofs the upper part of the great tower wherein Somerset had met with his misadventure. The tower stood boldly up in the sun, and from one of the slits, in the corner, something white waved in the breeze. "What can that be?" " said Charlotte. "Is it the fluff of owls, or a handkerchief?" " "It is my handkerchief," Somerset answered. "I fixed it there with a stone to attract attention, and forgot to take it away." All three looked up at the handkerchief with interest. "Why did you want to attract attention?" said Paula. "Oh, I fell into the turret, but I got out very easily."
"Oh, Paula," said Charlotte, turning to her friend, "that must be the place where the man fell in years ago and was starved to death."
"Starved to death?" said Paula. "They say so." "Oh, Mr. Somerset, what an escape."
And Charlotte Destancy walked away to a point from which she could get a better view of the treacherous turret.
"Whom did you think to attract?"
asked Paula, after a pause.
"I thought you might see it."
"Me personally?"
And, blushing faintly, her eyes rested upon him.
"I hoped for anybody. I thought of you," said Somerset.
She did not continue. In a moment she arose and went across to Miss Destancy.
"Don't you go falling down and becoming a skeleton," she said. Somerset overheard the words, though Paula was unaware of it, after which she clasped her fingers behind Charlotte's neck and smiled tenderly in her face. It seemed to be quite unconsciously done, and Somerset thought it a very beautiful action. Presently Paula returned to him and said,
"Mr. Somerset, I think we have had enough architecture for today."
The two women then wished him good morning and went away. Somerset, feeling that he had now every reason for prowling about the castle, remained near the spot, endeavoring to evolve some plan of procedure for the project entertained by the beautiful owner of those weather-scathed walls. But for a long time the mental perspective of his new position so excited the emotional side of his nature that he could not concentrate it on feet and inches. As Paula's architect, supposing Avil not to be admitted as a competitor, he must of necessity be in constant communication with her for a space of 2 or 3 years to come, and particularly during the next few months. She, doubtless, cherished far too ambitious views of her career to feel any personal interest in this enforced relationship with him, but he would be at liberty to feel what he chose, and to be the victim of an unrequited passion while afforded such splendid opportunities of communion with the one beloved, deprived that passion of its most deplorable features. Accessibility is a great point in matters of love, and perhaps of the two there is less misery in loving without return a goddess who is to be seen and spoken to every day than in having an affection tenderly reciprocated by one always hopelessly removed. With this view of having to spend a considerable time in the neighborhood, Somerset shifted his quarters that afternoon from the little inn at Sleeping Green to a larger one at Markton. He required more rooms in which to carry out Paula's instructions than the former place afforded, and a more central position. Having reached and dined at Markton, he found the evening tedious, and again strolled out in the direction of the castle. When he reached it, the light was declining, and a solemn stillness overspread the pile. The great tower was in full view. That spot of white which looked like a pigeon fluttering from the loophole was his handkerchief, still hanging in the place where he had left it. His eyes yet lingered on the walls when he noticed, with surprise, that the handkerchief suddenly vanished. Believing that the breezes, though weak below, might have been strong enough at that height to blow it into the turret, and in no hurry to get off the premises, he leisurely climbed up to find it, ascending by the second staircase, crossing the roof, and going to the top of the treacherous turret. The ladder by which he had escaped still stood within it, and beside the ladder he beheld the dim outline of a woman, in a meditative attitude, holding his handkerchief in her hand. Somerset softly withdrew. When he had reached the ground he looked up. A girlish form was standing at the top of the tower looking over the parapet upon him, possibly not seeing him, for it was dark on the lawn. It was either Miss Stancy or Paula. One of them had gone there alone for his handkerchief, and had remained a while, pondering on his escape. But which? If I were not a faint heart I should run all risk, and wave my hat or kiss my hand to her, whoever she is, apostrophe he thought. But he did not do either. So he lingered about silently in the shades, and then thought of strolling to his rooms at Markton. Just at leaving, as he passed under the inhabited wing, whence one or two lights now blinked, he heard a piano, and a voice singing the mistletoe bow. Apostrophe apostrophe the song had probably been suggested to the romantic fancy of the singer by her visit to the scene of his captivity. Zi. The identity of the lady whom he had seen on the tower, and afterwards heard singing was established the next day. I have been thinking, apostrophe said Miss Power, on meeting him, that you may require a studio on the premises. If so, the room I showed you yesterday is at your service. If I employ Mr. Avil to compete with you, I will offer him a similar one. Apostrophe apostrophe, Somerset did not decline, and she added, in the same room you will find the handkerchief that was left on the tower. Apostrophe apostrophe, ah, I saw that it was gone. Somebody brought it down? Apostrophe, I did, apostrophe she shyly remarked, looking up for a second under her shady hat brim. I am much obliged to you. Apostrophe apostrophe, oh no. I went up last night, to see where the accident happened, and there I found it. When you came up were you in search of it, or did you want me? Apostrophe apostrophe, then she saw me, apostrophe he thought. I went for the handkerchief only. I was not aware that you were there, apostrophe he answered simply. And he involuntarily sighed. It was very soft, but she might have heard him, for there was interest in her voice as she continued. Did you see me before you went back? Apostrophe apostrophe, I did not know it was you. I saw that some lady was there, and I would not disturb her. I wondered all the evening if it were you. Apostrophe apostrophe, Paula hastened to explain. We understood that you would stay to dinner, and as you did not come in we wondered where you were. That made me think of your accident, and after dinner I went up to the place where it happened. Apostrophe apostrophe, Somerset almost wished as he had not explained so lucidly. And now followed the piquant days to which his position as her architect, or, at worst, as one of her two architects, naturally led. His anticipations were for once surpassed by the reality. Perhaps Somerset's inherent unfitness for a professional life under ordinary circumstances was only proved by his great zest for it now. Had he been in regular practice, with numerous other clients, instead of having merely made a start with this one, he would have totally neglected their business in his exclusive attention to Paula's. The idea of a competition between Somerset and Avil had been highly approved by Paula's solicitor, but she would not assent to it as yet, seeming quite vexed that Somerset should not have taken the good the gods provided without questioning her justice to Avil. The room as he had offered him was prepared as a studio. Drawing boards and Wattman's paper were sent for, and in a few days Somerset began serious labor. His first requirement was a clerk or two, to do the drudgery of measuring and figuring, but for the present he preferred to sketch alone. Sometimes, in measuring the outworks of the castle, he ran against Avil strolling about with no apparent object, who bestowed on him an envious nod, and passed by. I hope you will not make your sketches, apostrophe she said, looking in upon him one day, and then go away to your studio in London, and think of your other buildings, and forget mine. I am in haste to begin, and wish you not to neglect me. I have no other building to think of, said Somerset, rising and placing a chair for her. I had not begun practice, as you may know. I have nothing else in hand but your castle. I suppose I ought not to say I am glad of it, but it is an advantage to have an architect all to oneself. The architect whom I at first thought of told me, before I knew you, that if I placed the castle in his hands he would undertake no other commission till its completion. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.